Hello, everyone, and welcome to Flawless, a music podcast. My name is Grant Parkin, and I'm joined today by my co-hosts, George Mannion and Liam McGuinness. This episode is being produced by Alicia McLaren. Each episode, we'll be looking at an album that one or more of us consider to be flawless. What that means might be different for each of us. Okay, shall we get started? Today, well, this episode is my opportunity to present my first album, which I believe is flawless, and that is Throwing Copper by the band Live. This was recorded between July and September 1993 and was released in April of 1994. Might give a bit of history as to why I thought this was flawless and the period in which I first heard it. So, I've stated earlier, I'm from a small town called East London, South Africa, a real workman's town, blue-collar sort of town. And my father was an accountant, my mother was a bookkeeper, and I was at a boarding school with a friend of mine who was also from East London, but his father was a fashion designer, and it was just crazy that sort of an industry could even exist from my world. And this gentleman, his dad had been overseas and had gone out to a CD store, a compact disc store for the new listeners of the world that only have iPods and MP3 players, etc. And he'd gone into, I think it was an HMV or something in the UK, and he'd said, look, I need something for my 15-year-old son. Anything you recommend? And the guy gave him Live Throwing Copper and said he'll enjoy this. So we first listened to it at probably the beginning of 95 or late 94, and it just blew us away. So it was the second album that Live produced. Their first one was Mental Jewelry, and they went on to do Secret Samadhi. I was fortunate enough to watch them in Brisbane on the Secret Samadhi tour probably towards the end of 2010. I was already in Australia. In the beginning of 2014, I was fortunate enough to go to the Enmore in Sydney and watch Ed Kowalczyk, the lead singer, perform the whole album from front to back, plus his other hits there. So I've seen them basically to the full twice. So there you go. Any initial thoughts from either Liam or George?
When you saw him down in Sydney, was that with the Live band or just he'd put his own band together?
No, he'd put his own band together.
Okay, cool. So,
yeah. I want you to know that I used to call them Liv.
Yes, so did I. And that's okay. I was mocked. I get mocked for anything. But yes, I also first thought it was Liv. But there you go.
So yeah, my first memory of this album, I think, is so back in 1994, I was working at my first job, which was at a Toys R Us.
Mm-hmm.
So a big toy chain thing we have. Everyone has. And I didn't listen to music then. I was listening to the pop radio. I didn't really listen to albums. I didn't really pay any attention to them. But where I was working with a lot of kids my own age, and they were always talking about some of the music they were listening to. So I remember this was one of the ones that everybody loved, and like Presidents of the USA.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's really the only two that stick in my mind. So, yeah, that's sort of my first memory. So, I mean, I knew all the singles, but mm-hmm. I'd never really sat down and listened to the full album before. And I actually had the same problem that you had for our last episode, where the version on Spotify has like five extra songs tacked onto the end of it.
Okay.
And I had all these notes ready in my head that's like, man, this album's way too long. And you get to the point where you think it should be over and it's still got five songs to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I went and started looking up track lists, and it's like, oh no, that's just some special version that they bolted five more tracks onto the end of it for it.
Interesting.
I was like, yeah, this is a really long album, but it's not. It's just that version. And then when I was reading, there was a bunch of different vinyl issues and then reissues where they took songs off. So apparently White Discussion, the last song, wasn't on the first vinyl release, but then they re-added it. Okay. And then they took another track off. It was just, it was just all chaotic.
Mm. All right. Well, look, the album itself sold 8 million copies and is 8 times platinum. And what I didn't know was, and this is thanks to Wikipedia, was an album used for torture by mass murderer John Bunting. So he'd play this when he would... I was like, whoa, that was...
Who was he torturing?
He was a serial murderer, apparently, right. And he used to play this album when he'd, in the in the death throes of sorting people out. So that's okay. A bit mad.
So it's not. So it wasn't just playing it to torture people. Just
it wasn't that bad.
Is he just targeting people who he knows doesn't like live? Like, I know you're not a fan. Listen to this.
You have to.
Really loud or something. Yeah.
What an accolade to have, though, for a record.
Well.
I'm pretty sure none of my albums that I've got coming up are torture albums, but now I'll have to look into it.
Well, I was going to use the Barney theme tune, which has been used by the Australian military, the American military, but never mind. Yeah. I'll have to avoid that.
Or anything from the Wiggles.
Yes, well.
Oh, that's new to me.
Look. All right. So there were a couple of US number ones as well, I suppose, as you're probably all familiar with, Selling the Drama and Lightning Crashes, I believe. But yeah, I just love it from start to finish. Great bass line opening track through to the version that I had ended with House, which is the silent track after White Discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, any thoughts? What are your thoughts?
For me, I was a child when it came out. I'm going to say that because I technically was. But I didn't actually know much about them until I was illegally working in nightclubs when I was 13, 14 and onwards. And I was working in rock clubs. So by that point, which was a bit later in the 90s, the song that I knew the most was I Alone, because that was the one that when I listened to the record in preparation for here, that was the song I was like, oh yeah, I do know this. Mm-hmm. I do know this one. And then I think All Over You, I think, was one that came out as well. So they were songs that I knew, but I knew them as being songs that were played in the clubs, in the rock clubs, alongside all the other grungy stuff and the metal, and like at that point we then started to get new metal, so it all kind of blended in at the time. And it was when I listened to the record through, I was like, I know this one. I know this one. And it threw me back to going, this is the song where, you know, Tom had his long hair and he was dancing away and this, that and the other. And I can actually recall moments in really dirty nightclubs where I was listening to some of these songs, which was awesome. But I'd never listened to the entire record all the way through before. So this was new for me in preparation for this podcast.
Awesome. Look, I think, as I said, from that blue collar sort of town, we this friend of mine whose father bought the record, track number 8, Shit Town, really resonated with us. And Waitress for that matter, because we're from, you know, this is just after, you know, post-apartheid South Africa. We've just had the first elections in April of 94 when the album was actually released. Ed's just singing about, you know, this lady's having it tough, and she might not have served you with, you know, this gleaming smile on her face, but you can. She's good enough for some change, please. Can you just, you know, give her that and some dignity, if you don't mind? So. Those are just a couple of the songs, I suppose, that really, apart from the massive hits or the significant hits that were the pop ones and in the clubs.
Yeah, I am. Like, I knew the big three, so I Alone, Lightning Crashes, All Over You. I Alone, once again, I knew it pretty well, and I'd always kind of thought, it's a bit weird that, you know, I'm the only one who can love you, I'm the only one who can, you know, be in a relationship with you. But then I sat down this time as I was listening through it and listened, had a look at the actual lyrics, and I think it's actually a song about God. I don't think it's him singing to a partner going, I'm the only one who can love you. I think it's more about God saying, why is God saying he's the only one who's, you know, the holy power, and he's the only one who can actually put temptation in front of you, and when someone else puts temptation in front of you, that's bad, but when I do it, it's good, and it's me testing your faith, whereas when other people do it, that's demons, and you shouldn't respond to that, and you should, like, yeah. So I think I just had a little bit more of a look into the lyrics, and it felt like, yeah, it wasn't him singing to a romantic partner so long as him trying to do some, you know, God is hypocritical sort of stuff. So I sort of came around a little bit on the song that way.
I did not get that.
Didn't I?
No. Sure.
Right.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Ooh,
are you looking up the lyrics now?
Yeah,
yep.
Totally.
Okay.
I I always thought it was just like a full-on like love. Like,
yeah.
I'm the most dedicated to you ever kind of song.
Yeah.
So I will have a little search around.
We can keep going if George wants to look up that.
You continue.
So yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other favourite songs? So.
I probably like the ones that aren't played as much, to be honest. The Dam at Otter Creek, I think, opens. It's just really like super confident bass line coming in. As I said, opens with that do 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 do, and you're just like, okay, come on, let's this is and then you know, and the lead guitar over that. Really enjoyed it. Also, Shit Town, fantastic. TBD. Which comes in after Shit Town, you've struggled to find. It's flawless form because of all of them are just fantastic, I suppose. And I do think it takes you on quite a journey as well in that mellow, and then it goes into a little bit more poppy, going Selling the Drama into I Alone, and then Lightning Crashes, and then it sort of goes back up again.
I mean, everyone has that reaction to Lightning Crashes, right? Like that's just the universal. Right there experience. Sure. Like I was listening to it today and I was standing in the kitchen and it came on and I just like had this Pavlovian response of like I ran my hand through my hair and I looked off into the middle distance and then looked down soulfully at my feet. Like it was just like that's what happens when this song plays. There's nothing, no one's looking at me and no one's here, but I'm just gonna do this movement of like, oh no, I'm sad. Like I'm having this deep introspective moment, even though I've heard it 1,000 times before and there's no surprises in there.
Yeah.
But it's just like, yeah, I had this muscle reaction.
Do you find it as a sad song for you?
Not sad as in like with no hope. Like it's hopeful as well, but it's like it's just that morose sort of low key beginning.
I would like to confirm that lead singer Ed Kowalczyk said of the song's lyrics for I Alone that people think it as a love song, but it really wasn't. The lyrics were more abstract, encompassing, and have a much larger message. The greatest teachers won't hesitate to leave you there by yourself, chained to fate. By saying that a profound lesson he derived from studying spiritual teachings was that religion and truth must be found for oneself and practiced, rather than just accepting the word of others. So, yeah, so it is very much a spiritual song. Mm. And I always thought of it as this like lovely kind of like I don't love you kind of song. I'm gonna probably not sing on every podcast, but
do it because we're not gonna, so you might as well someone gonna go.
But yeah, but I think of it as that song that, you know, people were making out to in grungy clubs
and stuff. Well, it was. Yeah. And it was
that, you know, dirty kissy song
for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And now I'm like thinking about people humping in the corner of a bar and like this is inappropriate. This is a spiritual song. We've all ruined it.
Yeah. On your own. Yeah. Your own journey. Yeah, two of you.
It's a spiritual journey you can have with someone, I suppose.
So, I mean, speaking of Kowalczyk, he brings a gravitas to this material that probably sets it a next level above what it would be if he wasn't there. Like that, you can feel what he's like, that raw stuff that he feels, he just like lays it all in there every time. I like, yeah, really like his the way that emotional stuff comes out from him.
The angel opens her eyes, pale blue colored eyes, presents the circle.
Yeah, I found that his lyrics almost Dadaist in some respects as well, because it was like they're so abstract. The don't worry. So sometimes it feels like lyrically, I found it really interesting because it feels like he's taken a collection of thoughts and chopped them into sentences, put them in a bowl and pick them out one by one, and put them together. And so it feels like that kind of really abstract. And but it not necessarily like not cohesive, but it just feels like really abstract, and I kind of liked that because I know that that's the kind of effect that people like Radiohead and bands will use, like they genuinely do that, and that's how I felt Ed's lyrics would come across sometimes, is just like really abstract weird stuff put together and he sings them in such an unusual way compared to some of the other artists of the era. Like, because he would.
It was 94, so it was.
It was very a mixture of that kind of grungy, metally time. Mm. But he does stand out as somebody that had a different approach to how to be a front man. So I found some of his lyrics a little bit like weird in that way.
Did you, because they, after he left the band, they got a new lead singer and they brought, they released an album back in 2014. So just the three musicians and then a new front guy.
Yeah.
So you obviously haven't heard that one.
No, I haven't heard that.
It's terrible. Okay. It's really, really bad. Like you need him in front of that, like to make it work. You need him in front of it, like raising that up that level of, like without him, it's so flat.
Okay.
I'd agree, actually. I think that he really makes the band.
Yeah. He wrote all the lyrics. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did all the lyrics. The rest of the band did the sound, but he wrote all the lyrics for it. It's a winner for me because of him and the passion and enthusiasm he brings to it. Anything else, you guys? Any other thoughts? Things that you didn't like about it? That didn't resonate with you? I mean, it's quite a different album relative to the Ben Folds and the Thermals, and that it is obviously it has got, a bit more acclaim. But what are your overall thoughts?
So I really like Stage and Waitress at the end. Stage is a really cool, like just upbeat, up tempo rock number, just powers through. And then Waitress and the whistling that kicks in at the end of Waitress is really cool, that little melody. But I kind of wish they'd had a bit more of that imaginative and sort of trying some different elements earlier and more all the way through it. Like, I think, like, bringing that in with, they just got those two epic numbers at the end still to go, sort of, I was like, that's really cool. I wish we'd had more of those elements all the way through.
Okay.
Because I think felt some of the music, not the lyrics and the vocals, but more the music side of things, got a bit repetitive and a bit bland for me. So I don't really, it doesn't really hit the mark for me that way.
Sure. Okay.
I really wish I'd gotten into this earlier. As like when I was younger, and this was the genre that I was looking for, because it was just some of the hits that I heard in clubs and stuff, but I never listened to the full records of, because I think it just came out a bit too early, and so I feel like I wish I'd had the emotional attachment to the album that I would have done had I've listened to it in my hormonal glory of like being a teenager. I feel like this is absolutely perfect for when it came out, for that, like that, what was happening at the time, and for how people were feeling. I guess where you're from as well, Grant. Yeah. Like, I can definitely see why it would resonate. Like, if in the same way that I'm from a small, like I'm from like a city in England, and certain gangster rap came out, and I went, yes, that's what I need. Yeah. so I can totally see why you would get like this kind of really grungy, dirty album like this and go, this is what I need to hold on to. So I wish I'd built some kind of emotional attachment to this, to Live or Live.
Or both.
Live when I was younger, because I think it would have suited me a lot then. Like, because to listen to it now, I'm like, oh, I wish they'd done this with the guitar, or I wish they'd done that with the drums and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, I'm just like, I'm being pickier because I don't have the emotional attachment, whereas I've had that with other records that we've had so far. So this is like a real challenge.
Yeah,
sure.
I think some of the stuff that we'll be talking about and the things that we'll go, oh yeah, I only really listened to this for the first time. When we bring our albums to it, like it's gonna be the same thing. The same thing is gonna happen in our albums, but it didn't matter because at the time we really liked it, and then you just follow that through as it comes through.
Mm. I think you raise a good point in that. The whistling, but specifically at the end of Waitress, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the album now, I've only just sort of thought about this as it stands. It's quite almost cookie cutter a lot of it, because it's that sort of chilled almost introduction, then it gets heavy, then it gets chilled again, and then it gets heavy, and then that's the song.
Yeah,
and lift and shift all the way through.
Yeah,
without that much, much variation, but
that's gonna be the thing, is like there's always gonna be a place for that, and I'm gonna bring you guys albums later down the line that you're gonna listen to and go, hang on, this is just the same thing. Like they're just playing the same thing. Why is he hated it the first time he heard it, why is he not like identifying that now? But so it's just like when you listen to it, I think, because I actually wrote a piece about this album
Oh, really?
3 years ago. So when they released that album, their new album. So I did a thing because Rancid, Bush, and Live all released albums in 2014. So they'd all released albums back in 1994.
Did they have tax bills to pay? Yeah.
Jeez, so I pitched a thing to say, hey, why don't I look at the three albums and then the three albums and, you know, look at whether or not we need these bands still releasing albums. And obviously in Live's case, the new album, the answer was definitely no. But like I said at the time, related back to what George mentioned before, is like his tortured persona feels genuine, and you can see why so many teens wore out their tape version of this album. Like when it came out and it was like 15, 16, 17 year olds, I can see why they were just like, yeah, this is great. And he's got that angst that I've got. And that's. So coming from it now, I'm not connecting with it as much, but I can definitely see, and I wasn't an angsty teenager either, so I probably wouldn't have connected. I didn't connect with it then as much either. But yeah, I can see why a lot of angsty teenagers would have.
You've been a wonderfully mellow man all your life, haven't you?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I'm incredibly jealous.
Yeah.
My thing was, story about me for some reason.
That's okay.
I don't drink. I've never had anything to do. I've never drunk or anything like that. Yep. And my parents knew that, which meant my parents just let me do whatever I want. So I would just hang out, like on weekends, I would hang out with my friends until 2, 3 a.m. and just come home whenever and just drive home or do whatever. And they didn't mind because they knew I wasn't drinking. So chances are I was being responsible and in charge of stuff.
Yeah.
So the whole teenage angsty thing where you get to that age and you go, man, my parents won't let me do anything. My parents just let me do whatever I want. They didn't mind at all. So that's, I attribute that to like never having gone through that teen angsty phase of like, I never had my parents telling me I couldn't do things.
Yeah.
See, my parents never said that I couldn't do things, and that's why I was working in nightclubs when I was 13.
Yeah. that didn't occur to me.
So the same parenting techniques don't always work for the children, do they?
No, and I was at boarding school, so I valued all my time with my folks. I was like so happy to see them.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. We have very different lives.
Yeah. So I was 180Ks away from my my small town at a boarding school. So all of my time with my folks was really cool. But maybe I just think that, again, it was in the country itself, in and of itself. And you know, I sort of found sport as an outlet for, you know, success or whatever outside of, you know, academia, where I didn't really apply myself as much as I could have.
Yeah.
And that's, I suppose, where I got, you know, some of these songs come from and all the rest of it. So,
I really value angsty music for young people. Mm. And I feel bad that there's generations that don't get particularly angsty music.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they really need it as an outlet. And like, you know, like love songs and stuff, and some of the songs that come out now, like I get to hear it because I employ a lot of like under 20, so I get to hear all the music they're listening to a lot all the time.
Mm.
And they don't have all of the same kind of like weird, angsty, annoying things that we have. Mm. It's odd. Like, just like, how do they get, where are their outlets if it's not through music?
Mm.
Could they get it if they wanted it though? That's the democratization of Spotify and streaming and everything, is that if they, like, I think people talk about what's going to be, like, you know, we'll never have another Beatles or a Nirvana or a big musical revolution. And the reason for that, to my mind, is that when those things come up, all the radio stations are playing the same thing. All the music magazines are talking about the same thing. So there is that wave of, like, oh, yeah, I'm listening to it because the magazine said it was great and I heard it on the radio. Now I can just find whatever music I want. I don't need anyone to tell me. I can absolutely 100% just find anything that I want, any style that I want, any genre that I want. So I'm only going to listen to the styles and genres that I do want to listen to. So maybe it's going to turn out to be that manufacturing of that angst by, you know, record labels, big evil record labels with giant suits and sunglasses and, you know, big cigars and stuff, was just manufactured via, that angst was just manufactured via the products and the commercialization of stuff that was around. Maybe. I don't know. I don't.
I like this. I like this theorem.
Yeah.
From the non-angsty boy. Absolutely no teenagers.
So I don't hang out with any teenagers. So, yeah.
Interestingly.
Close to them. You should ask them, hey, do you feel the democratization of music has had a negative impact on blah, 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 blah?
We'll ask Alicia.
Yes.
Yes.
For she is a young person.
Yeah.
And understands the young people and has a, mind you, she has a 15-year-old brother who is currently, her, in her words, worshipping at the throne of Kurt Cobain. So he's discovered Nirvana at 15 now.
15, that's a good time to
do it. Yeah, it's a really good time. Yeah, so I'm quite happy with that. Going back to your thing about you know, the Beatles, this, that and the other. My mother used to go to parties with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and she couldn't stand them because it was for her the equivalent of if we went to a party with One Direction, what would we do? And so they were just pop groups for her. So she was listening to obscure French, like, existentialist weird artists because that was cool, that was hipster, and then but was uninterested in the popular bands, which is weird. How do we get onto this from angst?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Get us back to live, Grant.
Get us back to live.
yes. Well, I think based on what we've just heard, certainly from in relation to Ben Folds and this album, I think part of the whole journey around this is actually getting the album itself. It's like there's a story behind it, whereas now you've got a Spotify or an Apple Music and you just get it whenever you want.
Yeah.
There isn't this, okay, well, you know, where would one start find one of these bands that is new or up and coming or whatever. It's everything at our fingertips and immediately available. And I think that does potentially cheapen your musical experience. And why would you listen to a full album? I'm only listening to full albums now because of this, you know, Flawless Music podcast. And I hope that the listeners out there, all, you know, however many there may be one day, do listen to the full albums as a result, because we are certainly, I'm richer for learning about the Thermals, at least, and Ben Folds Five, as it stands.
Mm.
So,
well, this is good for me because I'm listening back to what I should have been listening to when I was working in grungy, dirty clubs. I'm like, see, I only listened to the singles and I never got the chance to listen to albums. But I think partly that was so expensive.
Mm.
Yeah, sure.
To listen to an album was just, you had to really, really love it, really commit to it before you could buy an album. Whereas now I can, I've got a family Spotify. So the whole, everyone that, you know, in the whole team at our place have all got access to Spotify, and they can listen to full albums whenever they please. And I'm able to do that for, like, here I've been able to listen to Live Throwing Copper because I was able to listen to it on Spotify. But I don't think the podcast I wouldn't be able to do if I had to buy every single album every week. Like, that would be quite painful. That would be like,
I think we'd be distributing the albums by other completely legal means between ourselves.
We would all get together and have a
sit-down. We'd have a listening party.
Yeah,
correct.
That's definitely what would happen. ARIA and other groups that talk about copyright.
Yeah,
but for sure. Yeah, listening to a whole album. I'm genuinely, like, the album, this album would have sat alongside all the other kind of grungy albums I would have listened to at the time, and just like a lot of those other grungy albums, I think I would have gone, I like that song from that one, I like that song from that one, and I would have picked songs out. And I think this is the same for me. Like, it's a part of a genre that suited my early teens really well, and I picked out certain songs from it. But I probably wouldn't sit there and listen to the whole album. Like, there's other albums that I would have done that with.
Sure. So what I'm hearing then is, that's not a flawless album
for me
in and of itself.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think, but it's coming back to what we deem as being flawless.
Mm.
So, is it flawless in the genre and time that it was from, and the way it all flows, and this and the other, or are we flawless based on whether I would personally sit there and listen to the whole album like on repeat myself?
Sure.
Like, that's why I find this a really confronting, an interesting experience for experiment.
Yeah.
Maybe this is just an experiment by Liam just to make people squirm. So, yeah. So what do you...
I'm not that devious.
So from you two, you are devious. You're too mellow. What are we using as a definition of flawless?
Well, for me, I'm perfectly happy for all three of us to have a completely different definition of flawless and then just to explain it in the situation where it comes up. So
you're just a cop out.
I'm a pragmatist. there's going to be albums that are coming up from mine. So where the things that I'm criticizing an album for now, you could easily apply that to an album that I nominate and say, yep, this is one that I hold as flawless. So I think it's just going to be about explaining it in the moment. Mm-hmm. It's going to be about the situation that you first listened to it in. Like, it's going to be about, you listened to it in your situation, Grant, and then you held on to it and you kept it going through time, whereas George and I are sort of more coming to it at the point in time where we are right now.
Yeah.
So it's going to just be yeah, I think it's just going to be the place and the time and the situation that you find yourself in.
Mm.
But I know that there's other albums that Grant's coming up with soon that I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes. I'm okay. Not going to tell you which.
Okay, cool.
I'm going to bring 9 pages of notes as to why they are flawless. Yeah.
Oh,
and I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to beat Liam to the ground if he doesn't agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think for me, yeah, this I really like the singles. I find the musicianship behind it a little bit plain, or a little bit sort of the standard stuff. I wish there was a bit more of that experimentation and trying different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I love Ed Kowalczyk. I love what he brings to it. Absolutely, when he's not there and they try and release that album, it just falls apart. But I find listening to the whole album a bit of a slog. So
okay.
I hit the 3 songs and in Shit Town and Stage and Waitress, but ending with the big 6.5 minute numbers at the end and just, yeah, getting all the way through it doesn't really work.
Better
for
work
me.
For you.
Mm.
Okay. Interesting.
And I really love the singles that remind me of being a young, grungy person that looked like Courtney Love and really shouldn't have been dressed that. not at that age.
Yeah.
For me, I wouldn't choose to listen to the whole album now.
Okay.
But I would go to this now and pick out songs and and put them on playlists.
You could put a Spotify Best of Live playlist together really well. Like, that'd be really great.
Yeah,
with a few singles off the next album and some stuff from later on as well.
Yeah.
I'm currently putting together a Guilty Pleasures playlist, and I think there's songs on here that I like that I totally would pick out and just go, yep, I'm going to pop that on there, because I know there's other people that are going to go, I love this.
Yeah.
But, like, I probably wouldn't admit it, like blah, 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 but I really love this. So I think there's certain tracks in here, so especially I Alone and All Over You, I'd pick out, and maybe, and Lightning Crack. Yeah, I'd pick out the singles, though I find the title White Discussion problematic.
Yeah. Cool.
But I think in post-apartheid or South Africa, surely that would have been difficult. I think singles wise I would pick those out and plonk them straight into one of my guilty pleasure playlists for a party. But I, from an album perspective, I wouldn't sit there and listen to the whole thing.
Okay. Like,
yeah.
That's all right. So that's a 1 flawless and 2
thumbs down.
2 thumbs down.
It is.
Oh well, this is the first time it's happened.
You're still going to come back though, right?
I'm coming back, but I'll have 9 pages.
Yeah.
I'll have 12 pages.
12 pages of notes.
Yeah, and I'm escalating now.
Have your thumbs down, charged up, ready to go.
You're going to thumbs down everything.
In principle, I'm going to go. And I'm telling you, Ed, when I get hold of Ed again, he's going to be devastated.
You can tell him I'm really glad. This is the first time I've listened to the whole album. I'm actually really glad I did it.
Are you going to see them?
They're
playing in like a couple of weeks at the River Stage with Ed.
Oh, yes. I'm unemployed at the moment.
Okay.
So actually, thank you for asking. Yeah. My brother actually got hold of me and I was like, no, Rishi, it's not a good time. but if he does listen to this and it gets broadcast before, he wants to bring us along to review his
he won't invite
his
me
stage.
In
oh, really? Well, maybe not now, but I'm sure you could change him. So anyway, so that's 1 thumbs up, 2 thumbs down for Lives, or Live, according to George's the pronunciation, for Throwing Copper. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Our producer is Alicia McLaren, so shout out to her. Flawless is recorded at the Edge Studios at the State Library of Queensland, which is a fantastic free space. And as you know, free is the best price to pay. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/flawlessamp, a music podcast, and a Twitter handle as well. We're also on, that's it. Other than that, thanks again for listening, guys, and we'll see you next time.